Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. This is Justin Nasiri. Usually on the show, I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today, I'm trying something completely different. Going to be diving into a book that's really helped me in my career lately. Wanted to share with each of you and let me know your feedback on this sort of format. But it's going to be pretty different from our normal style. So this is episode number 96. Special thanks to those of you who completed the survey for feedback I sent out. Very much appreciate that. One person mentioned the importance of online notes, so for this I'm going to be trying something new. On the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io, I'm going to post an outline that I put together for this talk, full of spelling errors, grammar errors, and all, in case that helps, in case it helps to see it verbally in addition to listening to it or instead of it. Check it out there at beyondtheuniform.io. So those of you who had listened to my interview with Cal Newport in episode number 86, he's an author. He wrote a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You that I loved. He talks about that the secret to finding deeply fulfilling work is not about following your passion. Instead, it's about getting really freaking good at whatever it is you're doing. And that by developing a craft, by really honing a specific skill set, it'll lead to three ingredients that have been proven to lead to a more fulfilling career, which is the amount of autonomy you have, competency in your role, and relatedness or connection to others. This week, I wanted to dive into his next book, which is called Deep Work. And special thanks to Ryan Ginnaw, who you heard in episode number 61. He is the author at the websites Cash Money Life and The Military Wallet. He recommended this book. I'm very grateful that he did. I think that this applies to anyone who wants to have a meaningful career, who wants to figure out how to get a lot better. And as part of this show, I'm going to just skim the surface on this book. It's not that long of a book. It took me, you know, reading it on and off just less than a week to really fly through this. But in this show, I'm going to be talking about six tips that have been most helpful to me in these last couple of weeks since reading it. But the book is full of other ideas, some of them that may resonate with you more than the ones I'm going to cover. So check out the book. If you do an audiobook or digital book, I'd ask or request that you do order that through Beyond the Uniform. It does help offset the costs. It's about $120 a month to keep the show going. Full disclosure, if you do a free trial with Audible, Beyond the Uniform makes about $15. If you buy the book through our link on the site, we get about 15 cents. So clearly we're crushing it financially. Not really, but if you do either of those things, it will mean I lose less money each month on the show. So let's talk about Deep Work. I loved this book. It's had a huge impact on my productivity since reading it. And I'm very excited to share this with you. My intention is to help you, wherever you're at right now, whatever you're doing, help you get a little bit of an edge and push yourself a little bit more. In terms of the structure, as always at beyondtheuniform.io, I'll call out specific time markers in case you want to skip around the show. But here's the basics of what I want to go through. I want to talk about first a background on deep work, why it's important, just giving you context of why this even matters. And then we'll dive into six different tips, tips about email, tips about scheduling, tips about a daily shutdown procedure, tips about sprints that will actually build your deep work muscle. Fifth, a work-centric meditation, not traditional mindfulness meditation, but more specifically thinking about an item for work. And then lastly, free time, which I think has been very motivational for me. So obviously, as the name implies, let's start with the background. Cal Newport in this book is making the argument that deep work is very, very important. And so what is deep work? Well, one way of looking at it is he asks, how long would it take in months to train a really smart recent college graduate with no specialized training in your field to complete a given task? So if you think of some sort of task and you think, man, if I had some kid straight out of college, it would take me maybe a month or two to teach him how to do this. It's shallow work. It's not exactly deep work. In fact, up to about a year, I think he says, if it takes someone a year or less college student a year or less to do it, it's not really deep work. So while that sort of activity may keep you busy, it may make you feel momentum, make you feel like you're moving, making progress, it's not the deeply skilled work that's going to set you apart, that's going to get you ahead in your career, that's going to allow you to advance as rapidly as possible. And so he talks about balancing deep and shallow work. You know, we're all going to always have some level of shallow work, email, just tasks, to-dos, knocking things out. He talks about, you know, obviously writers and intellectuals, they might be able to detach for months to focus in deep work on something specific. Most of us can't do that. And so one of the things I found helpful in this book is he gives lots of practical tips that no matter what your occupation is, you're able to be able to build up a deep work muscle and shift back and forth in a way that still allows you to not get fired for doing the shallow things. So he does talk about how important it is that throughout our work day, we really start to be aware of when we're doing shallow work. He says in his books, quote, "It's difficult to prevent the trivial from creeping into every corner of your schedule if you don't face, without flinching, your current balance between deep and shallow work, and then adopt the habit of pausing before action and asking, what makes the most sense right now," end quote. And I love this thought of just trying to build up a muscle of coming up for air, you know, raising up your periscope, looking around and reevaluating, is this the highest leveraged use of my time? Many of you have heard that 80-20 rule, which is roughly saying that like 20% of the effort that leads to 80% of the results. They talk about this a lot in consulting, constantly assessing that 80-20. What's the 20% of effort I can expend to get 80% of the impact? And I think that's what he refers to here, coming up and just really asking yourself, is this the most effective possible use of my time? Again, talking about this focusing on highest leverage items, he talks about, quote, "If you give your mind something meaningful to do throughout all your waking hours, you'll end the day more fulfilled and begin the next one more relaxed than if instead you allow your mind to bathe for hours in semi-consciousness and unstructured web surfing." And so if you're like me, you're probably thinking when I say this, like always evaluating a highest leverage item, always going deep. It sounds exhausting. And sometimes I think like, man, when I check out Reddit, when I check out Facebook, when I surf my email, when I do whatever, it's allowing my mind to recoup. The truth is that's not the case. But by pushing your mind to focus on these highest leverage items, by allowing yourself uninterrupted stretches to really go deep, that's actually building your muscles in your mind. It's actually going to lead to more energy, not less. The quote I loved on this was, "One of the chief things which my typical man has to learn is that the mental faculties are capable of a continuous hard activity. They do not tire like an arm or a leg. All they want is change, not rest, except in sleep," end quote. And so I love that thought that, you know, our mind, it's not like we're getting exhausted and we have to zone out on Netflix to rejuvenate. We have to check the news to rejuvenate. Those things, as he points out in his book, they really are distracting. They're really much more exhausting than we even realize. And so if you're like me, some of the things that typically distract me, apps, Facebook, Reddit, email, I find myself reaching for my phone instinctively before I even realize it. I'm getting on an elevator. I'm in line at Starbucks. It's just before I even realize it, in this subconscious effort to keep myself from getting bored, I reach for my phone thinking that it's restorative. It's really my mind's way of keeping me from getting bored. But Cal argues there's a huge value for being bored. It's restorative, it allows your mind to recoup, and it allows your subconscious in the background to solve these problems that might be on your mind. Those of you might relate, if you've had a great idea in the shower or on a drive to work, you realize that some of your best ideas don't come when you're hard at work. They come when you're just doing something else. Not distracting yourself with email, things like that, but just doing some other activity and being bored. So, you know, these things like Facebook, emails, all of these apps, they're great, but they do have a way of creeping into our lives. Cal says, addictive websites of the type mentioned previously thrive in a vacuum. If you haven't given yourself something to do in a given moment, they'll always beckon as an appealing option. End quote. And so we're going to talk about some strategies about this, but just starting to be aware. I'm sure everyone listening, almost everyone will relate to that. Any spare second, you know, you've got that urge, that impulse, that hunger to plug in on one of these things. So one of the ways to help with this when it comes to these apps that pose themselves as productivity boosting or necessary or vital for us to function, Cal talks about, quote, these services aren't necessarily, as advertised, the lifeblood of our modern connected world. They're just products developed by private companies, funded lavishly, marketed carefully, and designed ultimately to capture, then sell your personal information and attention to advertisers. End quote. So let's just take Facebook, which I think has many goods, many positives, but ultimately they are a for-profit company. They want to capture your time and therefore capture your data, capture your clicks for ads. It's not simply this altruistic thing. So don't buy into this thought that it's essential, that it's you need to be plugged into something like that all the time. And then Cal talks about how there's no way to increase your ability to conduct deep work, the work that's really meaningful for your career, that's really going to get you good, unless you start to wean yourself off these distractions. And so one of the last things I'll say before I get into specific tips is that Cal talks about to be really deliberate into the tools we let into our lives. There's so many great tools right now, it can be easy to start to believe that you need all of them. But he asks, you know, is this really helping you? Or another quote I love, the craftsman approach to tool selection is to identify the core factors that determine success and happiness in your professional and personal life, and then adopt a tool only if its positive impacts on these factors substantially outweigh its negative impacts, end quote. And just to realize that every single tool we use, every time we switch context, there is a cost. It costs our attention, our ability to focus deeply in a way that will allow you to be the best at what you do. So hope that makes sense. I hope I'm not doing too much of a disservice in terms of the reasons why this is important. But if you're still with me, here's six tips that I've just found really valuable in my career these last couple of weeks. So the first tip is around email. Here's a quote from his book. Schedule in advance when you'll use the internet, and then avoid it altogether outside these times. I suggest that you keep a notepad near your computer at work. On this pad, record the next time you're allowed to use the internet. Until you arrive at that time, absolutely no network connectivity is allowed, no matter how tempting. End quote. I know that sounds philistine. It sounds a little bit maybe even barbaric, but it's so powerful. I just notice in these last few weeks how much more productive I am, how much faster I accomplish tasks, how much more pleasure I derive from the deep work that I'm doing when I'm really focused on something. And I've noticed now in retrospect, I'm so used to every 5 or 10 minutes flipping over what's going on in Facebook, what's going on in Reddit, what's going on in New York Times. And so by implementing this very simple thing, it's been incredible at keeping me focused. It's like an itch. And if you fight that urge to scratch it, you build up the muscle to not do it more. And so he does, he talks about like literally every time you check your email, even though if you're just glancing at it, it sticks with you. It distracts you for minutes, tens of minutes afterwards. And I don't think I really fully understood that until reading this book. He does talk about that if you're doing work and you feel like you have to plug into the internet for some reason, at least wait 5 minutes. Just build up that urge to not do it right away. And for those of you who do meditation, most people now in high power jobs are doing this, with meditation, you realize the power of building that muscle of not just being at the whim of your mind, not just doing whatever you feel like doing in a response, but rather cultivating a more choosing to do something rather than just reacting. So the second tip is around scheduling. So he talks about scheduling the day before, and we'll talk about this in our shutdown procedure next, but scheduling the day before your day out in 30-minute blocks. And I've been doing this religiously, and I love it. So literally, I take a sheet of paper, I draw a line down the left, I block out from, as he prescribes, 8:30 to 5:30. We'll talk about that in a second. But 8:30 to 5:30. And then on each, give 30 minutes for each line. So you kind of tick off those marks with two lines in between. And so for each 30 minutes, figure out what you're going to do. It could be email. I have that right now. I have 3 email chunks that I've been really trying to stick to. Hopefully getting down to 2, but for now, 3 is working. Then I'll mark off some tasks. Hey, in this 30-minute block, I'm going to work on this one task, these 3 tasks, these 5 tasks. I'm just going to knock them out. The next 2 blocks, I'm going to set aside an hour for one really in-depth task. I have a phone call, so I'm going to block that off. But really allocating every single 30-minute block to something. And it doesn't matter that you stick to this. It's not about like accuracy on this. Throughout the day, things will come up. So like, you know what? This is what I planned, but now I'm proactively saying I'm going to shift things around. Let me redo. You just cross it out right to the right of it. You put in the new activities, but it's setting the pattern that you own your time. Your time and these tasks don't own you. You are the alpha here. You are taking active control and choosing what you're doing rather than letting just things just fall on top of you. And so he asks, he talks about building that habit of asking what's most important to work on. He talks about, too, trying to figure out for your job what percentage of time you think should be spent on deep work versus shallow work, and then trying to structure by that. I haven't been as great with that, but just even with this simple scheduling approach, it's been so massive and has cut down on those distractions that really sap productivity. So let's talk about the third one now, shutdown. And so first of all, let's go back briefly to the schedule. I said 8:30 to 5:30. Probably a lot of you are like, 5:30 would be great. I never get done with work by 5:30. One thing he talked about is that, we often will work to the time allotted. Time is like that, like it's like a gas. It fills to the container provided. And he talks about, he gives examples for himself and others, but when he set a deadline, let's say at 5:30, and he did not give himself excuses, he worked so much harder because he knew he had to accomplish things before that time. And so I'm finding this in my own life. It's forcing me to weed out the things that aren't essential. It's forcing to cut down on the chit-chat, the things that just don't really move the needle for me. And so, he also talks about declining things. If you set a 5:30 deadline or 6:30, whatever it is for you, let's just say 5:30, it forces you to be ruthless about what you say yes to. And he talks about, you end up saying no to most things. And he talks about don't offer excuses when declining opportunities. Don't offer consolation prizes. Hey, I'd love to help you, but I have to do this. It's just like, hey, I can't do it. Sorry. And even if you give excuses, people can find ways. Well, maybe you can do this. Maybe you can do that. It's just really being locked in on what matters to you in work and what doesn't, and just making more time for the things that do. I think that's a big theme of the book. So shutdown. One thing I love, I've got a little sticky note I'm looking at right now on my desk. I've been doing this. It's going to sound probably cheesy, but try it. It's been so helpful for me. And so what he talks about is it's really essential to shut down from work at the end of day, to give your subconscious time to rejuvenate and work on problems. And so you have no intrusions of work email or anything related to work until you start the work the next day. I know there are so many people, myself included, I would, you know, kick off work with the thought of, hey, I'm just going to go back online tonight, 9 or 10, knock out a couple other things. Don't do it. Just try this. Fight the urge. Force yourself to do what matters during the day and give yourself, give your creativity the room it needs to rejuvenate by not distracting yourself. By giving yourself this uninterrupted period is a gift to your work. Give yourself this uninterrupted period. Let the creative juices flow. Let your mind recoup from that work aspect. And as we'll talk about at the very end, give yourself some free time, some enjoyment, some really things that are going to benefit you in so many different ways. And so that's why he talks about having a distinct shutdown procedure that you go through each and every day, whenever you end the day. And it's a way, it's building a routine that tells your mind it's okay. You can relax now. You can stop thinking about this. So here's what he recommended. I've done this and I highly recommend it. Just give it a shot. So the first thing you do, email. Is there anything urgent? I comb through, maybe I respond to the urgent ones. I look at the ones that I need to respond to, but part of this is the action and part of it is the intention for my subconscious of saying, look, there's no email that I'm missing right now that has to be responded to before 8:30 tomorrow. So first I start with email, then I move on to my to-do list. I look at my to-do list and I say, is there anything outstanding? Is there anything I need to do right now? And if there is something urgent, do I have a plan in place to address it? So on the one hand, there's the tactics of it. You're getting the plan in place. On the other hand, there's the subconscious aspect of telling your brain, it's okay to chill out. Like, there's nothing hanging over my head. There's no reason to be stressed out. You can check out and enjoy the rest of your day. So we did email, we did to-do list. Next thing he talks about is calendar. So I look at the next 3 days of my calendar. Is there anything I'm missing? Oftentimes I'll find this. I'm like, oh shoot, I've got a meeting in 2 days. I need to prepare for that. Let me add that to my to-do list. I need to prepare for that meeting. But you're just looking 3 days in advance, making sure there's nothing you're missing. Again, there's the tactics and there's the subconscious aspect. No need to freak out. There's nothing, no unexpected obstacle coming up. I'm in control and I know what's going on. And then the next one is setting the plan for tomorrow. That's when I take out my legal pad I'm looking at right now. I jot out 8:30 to 5:30. I look at my to-do list. I jot out on my calendar what I've got planned, and I just fill in the blanks with lunch, fill in the blanks with tasks and email and deep work, and really trying to give more and more time to deep work, which, you know, the maximum he says you can ever do for deep work, by the way, is like 3 to 5 hours. And so, you know, even if you're just starting with 1 or 2 hours of deep work, know that you're building up that muscle. But setting the plan for tomorrow, I think that really helps my mind disengage, because I know it's just a great feeling when I walk in the next morning. I look, I've got it going. I don't need to think about what I'm doing. I can just dive right in and know that I'm working on the highest priority items. And of course, I can reevaluate as the day goes by. So we talked about email, to-do list, 3-day calendar, plan for tomorrow. The last one is, I know this sounds cheesy, but he literally says, and I do this too, I say out loud, shut down complete. And what I'm doing, I'm training my brain. I'm training my mind. Like, when I say those words, it's that Pavlovian response. Like, it's okay to just disengage now. It's okay to do something else. So that's the shutdown procedure. Let me actually jump down to free time. One of the things I really appreciated about what he wrote about is that there's a need to plan free time with structured activities that exercise your mind and truly rejuvenate. Not social networks, not the web. These things are not effective at decompression. They're going to fill in any vacant time, but it's like a drug. It's not actually helping you. And, you know, I still watch, you know, 20 or 30 minutes of Netflix at night with my wife. I'm not saying that these things are bad, but it's like the importance of treating your free time almost like you do your job of like planning things you're going to enjoy. You take off at 5:30. That could be time with your kids. That could be time reading. That could be time, you know, doing something that's meaningful. It could be reading on the internet, but do something that's actually valuable, like study something that actually matters rather than just these mindless activities that make you feel good in the moment, but aren't really helping your mind relax, aren't going to actually make you happy. Fifth one, he talks about sprints, and this is definitely worth reading the book for, but he talks about Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt, I'm going to butcher this, but he, in school, he did so many extracurricular things. He like wrote a book. He just was like, you've ever seen the movie Rushmore? He's like that kid in Rushmore who's like the president of every society and like not necessarily the best student, but he did actually do fine. He wasn't the valedictorian, but he did really well. And one of the things that he talks about that he did for that is he would work in these sprints. Cal Newport calls them... calls this exercise of starting to work like Theodore Roosevelt, he calls them Roosevelt dashes. And so what I mean by that is once per week, you set aside time for a given task of deep work, but you give yourself less time than you need. And what it's doing is it's forcing yourself to work more productively. So let's say you know, hey, this piece of work, I know it probably takes me about an hour. I'm going to set a timer and give myself 45 minutes. It's forcing your mind to think faster. It's forcing yourself to work more efficiently. I mean, anyone, I'm sure everyone listening has exercised, obviously, and it's just, you know, if you're adding the incremental 2.5 pounds, the incremental 5 pounds to weights, it's not a lot of weight, but you're forcing yourself to become stronger. That's the way I think of this, is just really trying to set yourself, to even set your mindset that you are getting better, that you are growing, that you are getting stronger. Maybe that resonates with you, maybe not, but I really love this thought of Roosevelt dashes. He talks about starting once per week. You can expand from there, but once a week is probably sufficient to start. Last one, he talks about productively meditating. And I'm a huge fan of meditation. I'll talk about that in a future episode. But for productively meditating, he talks about 3 times a week taking a walk and thinking about one specific problem. And then just keep coming back to it. You know, avoiding distraction. Beware of looping back over and over again the same aspects of this problem, but just really concentrating on one item for the duration of that walk. When I take my dog out, I try this a lot now. I'll think, hey, I have an upcoming sales call tomorrow, and like, what's the best way to present information? And of course, my mind wanders, but just constantly bringing myself back. And it's building a muscle, but I've also been surprised at how much I've been able to move the ball forward just by doing that simple exercise. So that's the highlights on deep work. Hope you enjoyed this. Hope this helps. Drop me a note. Leave a comment on the website. Respond to a tweet. Let me know how you've enjoyed this. I'll be back later this week with the traditional format of an interview. But until then, enjoy the week and wishing you all well.